This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 105. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com
and call us on
020-88-167-691.
I'm David Hinchliffe.
And I'm Berners.
So it's episode 105. And we were in Durham this time last week, of course, and that was a chance for some high-quality players to have a little go on pitch vision. So how did that go from your point of view, Berners? You were there, you were casting your eye over the events. What did you think of the latest Pitch Vision Academy live event?
Yeah, it was really good. We worked very closely with the Durham Academy. They had the England under-19 selector down Tim Boone that day, so that the boys were right on the money, and obviously they were pretty pumped and anxious to do well. So we integrated the system in with a couple of things they were doing during the warm-up and the fielding session at the start. We had our fielding system set up, which I think added quite a bit of excitement to it. All the boys were pretty pumped to see their results and also kind of internally get them kind of going for the rest of the session, which was good fun. And then on a pitch vision system side of things, we had the batting and the bowling running in a kind of natural net session, which provided the bowlers ultimately with what they were doing. So they were breaking that down by kind of balls of six and looking at different durations of faster bowlers bowling and seeing exactly what they could achieve in that time, their accuracy, their line and their length, and then allowing the coaches to kind of get quite a quick and precise overview of what each player was doing. So yeah, it was good, and good to work with some guys right at the top of the game, possibly some future stars there as well.
That is one of the annoying things with nets, isn't it? I see it at club level all the time. You see players who are just running up and bowling, a batsman who are just having a hit, and there's nobody really knows exactly what's going on. You've got a vague idea if you're bowling where you're pitching the ball, but you're not quite sure, and you don't remember really from week to week. You may go away with a vague feeling of, yeah, that was all right, or I need to do better next week. But you don't really have any way of knowing for sure, and you can't really make any plans based on it. You just hope. It's practice by hope almost, isn't it, when you don't have any feedback. That's why I like the pitch vision system so much, because it does give you that instant feedback. And you can, if you're running up and bowling and you put six balls on the spot, then yeah, you've put six balls on the spot. If you bowl 50 balls in a session or, 60 balls in a session, and then you go away, you come back the next session, you can't remember. So, yeah. you kind of get over that problem. And that's just good coaching. That's nothing to do with technology. That's just using technology to get improved coaching and to make a plan. So, if someone's inaccurate, then you can work on things to make them more accurate. And then you can measure that. So
sure. It was really interesting as well that you've got guys there that are kind of 18, 19 years old. They've gone all the way through the Durham age group. Some of them are involved in the England setup. Yet when you ask them, if you've ever had this kind of technology before, or how fast you think your stock delivery is, or how far you think you turn the ball, they have absolutely no idea. So they're quite interested as well to pick up this kind of data feedback and be able to digest that into all the other things that's going on.
And of course, it's a very hospitable part of the world, the northeast of England. But you raced off straight afterwards, Berners, to get back to training, didn't you?
Not really. They had this new bouncy artificial surface, and they got me in against the spinners, and I didn't really know what I was doing. I should have just stayed in bed and had a muffin.
Well, of course, coming up on the show, we've got some more exciting interviews. We've got Pete Johnston, the Irish cricket analyst. He's going to be giving us his view on how Ireland have done in this World Cup. And I think by most people's analysis, they've put in an extremely good showing. And we've also got Gary Palmer giving us some more batting tips and some ideas on how you can construct a good technique, or if you're a coach, how you can coach good technique into somebody in a really simple way. So we'll cover that in more detail. I'm joined on the line now by Pete Johnston, the Irish cricket analyst, and he's in Kolkata at the moment after another fighting performance, this time against the West Indies. So let's start by talking about that. Pete, how do you see the game from the analyst's chair?
Yeah, we had a good game against the West Indies. Disappointed to lose it in the end again. We put ourselves in a winning position. We bowled with great discipline up front. Trent Johnston and Boyd Rankin bowled extremely well. Just very disciplined bowling. It was a difficult enough wicket. The ball wasn't quite coming off the bat. We had them struggling really and struggling to score. I think they were 130 for 3 after 31 overs, but got up to 275. Kieran Pollard came in and, as he does, hit, you know, even hitting miss hits out of the park for 6. We could have bowled better to him. I think that was probably the one disappointing part. It was something we focused on in the meeting. On the batting side, again, we had one big stand. That was pleasing, but in a lot of our games, we've failed to back that up with 50 partnerships. You know, it would be nice to get at least 250 partnerships to back up a big partnership. And we failed to do that in this game, which ultimately cost us in the end from being in a winning position.
In hindsight, when you look back at that period where Kieran Pollard was hitting it to all corners, how would you have liked to see the bowlers bowl to him?
Yeah, I think with him, and if you were to look at his wagon wheel after the game, you know, he hit long on, he hit cow, and he hit, I suppose, from square leg to long on was where he hit most of his boundaries. So, you know, we had a plan to bowl a more 6-stump line, so wide of off stump. So if you have an imaginary 6-stump, that's where we wanted to bowl, you know, full slower balls, and then bowl sort of 6-stump line out of his reach almost. And I don't think we really managed to execute that properly.
Is it just in the heat of battle sometimes people forget or they feel the pressure a bit and it doesn't quite come off according to what they were thinking about before the game?
Yeah, I can't speak for the guys, but I mean he's a very difficult person to bowl to, and perhaps at times it all happens very quickly and suddenly things can change very quickly for you as a bowling unit, and that's when you need to take time out and just get your focus back.
Is it a good tactic to bowl slower balls when you're faced with a slower pitch?
It depends on the wicket. I think this one, it did. It made it quite difficult to hit with, you know, pace off was almost easier. Whereas if someone was running in and bowling with pace on the ball, it was coming on. So, I think taking the pace off was important. And one thing I found with slower balls is that it's useful to bowl them if a player is weak bowling a certain line, whether it's straight or whether it's wider of the stumps. To bowl those slower balls, that line is probably most effective. And, you know, you've got to look as well whether you're on a pitch like that, it was better to bowl the slower balls more into the wicket, on a good length even, or shorter, rather than going full. Because, you know, that could be picked easier and hit more as a half volley, and guys can almost set themselves for that. So, yeah, it was one of those pitches where slower balls into the pitch would have worked well.
Let's talk about fielding now, because one of the things that people have been noting about Ireland is the standard of the fielding. How do you feel the fielding was? Well, how do you feel it's been throughout the tournament, and how do you feel it was against the West Indies?
Yeah, no, I think it's been excellent throughout. You know, speaking to the Indian analyst after the game, he basically said if we get 220, it's more like 250 because we'll save 30 runs in the field. And I think that's the way teams look at us now, is that we can potentially save that 30 runs in the field. Throughout, it's been excellent. The ground fielding, especially in anticipation, throwing as well. We've had more direct hits this tournament. We've had a UK baseball coach who joined us before the World Cup and for some of this tour. Mm-hmm. He's worked hard with the guys.
It seems like a trend to take a baseball coach and get them to work on fielding with players, because, of course, Australia have been doing it as well. Why do you think baseball has a head start on cricket when it comes to fielding skills?
Yeah, well, I think in throwing, and I think it's something that should start when you're younger. I mean, we've spent a lot of time in grooving the throwing action. We have a throwing program, which basically goes through various stages and just builds it up. So you start on your knees, and then you, and the guys do this warm up still, and then you stretch out the arm further, and putting you into certain positions, you know, almost reverse chaining it to a degree, I guess, and then you start to move further back and progress and build it up. But that's there to help strengthen the arm, and then also to improve technique. So it's something that I suppose the biggest factor is staying on top of the ball so that you get good rotation, 12-6, he calls it, backspin really, on the ball so it goes straight. And in order to do that, you've got to have a good technique. And, you know, much like a bowler, the wrist's got to, at the outcome, come behind the ball, and the chest has got to lead and bring the arm through at the target. So I think it's improved us greatly. But I do think it's something that should be done, you know, with underage squads from under-11s, under-13s up, if they could, you know, start off a basic throwing program for 5-10 minutes in pairs, practicing good technique. You know, it would be frightening, I think, the sort of standard of fielders that you would have that then came into your senior side, and you could immediately work on, you know, those more advanced skills. So I think starting it early is a big thing. I think you'll find certain players that who've done the same thing for years and years will always find it difficult to adapt. So they might make small adaptations in their technique, but they're not going to make massive changes to what they've always done. So starting it, the younger the better, obviously. And it doesn't have to be 100% flat-out throws. You know, it can be basically grooving the throwing action, which is what our guys do. And then we obviously have the fielding practice where we're short, sharp, intense. And that's when you are going flat out with your arm. So you can groove your throwing action just like you would a cover drive.
Let's talk a little bit about fielding drills in general. One of the criticisms that has been put towards England is because they've been playing together so long and doing the same drills for so long, they're all getting a little bit fed up, and you know there's not much left in the tank. How long does it take before those kind of, you know, those fielding drills, those important fielding drills, do start to get a little bit boring, and it starts to have a negative effect rather than improving things?
Interesting question. I haven't seen it with our guys, but yeah, I think, you know, one thing we've done as well is a lot of, so aside from the, we sometimes break net sessions up where guys work in twos and threes, so you might have two or three guys working on fielding, two or three guys working on S&C, and then obviously the guys batting and bowling, and they kind of rotate. So that's quite nice to mix it up between that and team practice. We also have, you know, obviously big team fielding sessions. One of the things we've worked very hard on is relay throws. So if a guy's off balance on the boundary, getting it into a relay man, because he won't have time to set himself and throw the whole way to the keeper or the whole way to the bowler. So using that relay man has been something that we've added. Also, even using a relay man in the ring, if that makes sense. So if you feel the ball at cover point and you're off balance, you can potentially, say you feel it in front of point, you can potentially pop it to cover and then throw it to the keepers or bowlers end. So I suppose that's added something, which has given the guys, you know, something new to work on, which has been exciting. I suppose with a tournament like this, you sometimes can have long breaks between matches. Mm. And when you're training, it can get a little bit monotonous. So you're always trying to break it up. And sometimes as well, today in Calcutta, it was very hot. So we actually decided to leave the fielding session at the end of net and to save some fuel in the tank for the next day because of the heat. So sometimes less is more, and keeping it short, sharp, intense, and particularly the amount of cricket England have played, you know, I suppose they need that rest too, and then short, sharp, intense fielding drills. But team drills can always be fun and exciting and have a good buzz, as opposed to the individual stuff. So if you're lacking a bit of motivation, those team drills or competitive drills are always good.
What surprised you about the way that you've played so far in the tournament?
I don't think anything surprised me, to be fair. I came here expecting us to perform in every game, and I suppose that's been the most pleasing factor. We have performed in every game, and we've put ourselves in winning positions. We've only the one win to date against England, but India, West Indies and Bangladesh could have gone our way. So nothing surprised me, to tell you the truth. I think we're a very well prepared side. I think we try and tick all the boxes, cover all the bases, work hard at our fielding. I suppose the only disappointment has been, and surprise perhaps, when you look at the batting, it's been two guys in every innings that have stood up and had a big partnership. And I suppose the lack of partnerships around that big partnership has been one surprising factor. I suppose another surprise, and it's a negative again, would be Porterfield and Sterling as an opening partnership. They haven't fired as a partnership yet. And if we see that, you're going to see us getting a big score because they both score quickly. Very positive players, and I'd like to see them, get off to a good start, and who knows what score we might get.
Time now for your chance to win a prize in the question section, the coaching question section. Every week you have a chance to win a coaching course, an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy, and you can find out more about that at pitchvision.com/academy. The best question of the week always wins a prize, so Berners has picked a couple of questions out of the mailbag that should be interesting to discuss. And what's the first one you've got there, Berners?
We've got a question on strength, power and speed training here from Anwar. He's wanting to know, he's only a 13-year-old lad, whether if he does some squats, will this improve his ability to bowl fast? And if so, how many should he do a day?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Age 13, there's somewhat of a question mark over whether you should do strength training or not. The short answer is that, yeah, there's no reason why you can't improve your strength when you're young. When you say the word squats, different people think of different things. Some people think of a big, muscly guy in the gym with a bar on their back, with loads of plates on each side, screaming as they do ridiculous weighted squats. And then other guys, when you talk about squat, they just think about, doing a bodyweight squat. So a complicated area, if you like, because you don't really know what you're referring to. When I say squats to you, what pops into your head, Berners?
I was going to say the kid who always does his homework at school, but I would say, yeah, getting on using your legs as a base and then crouching down, keeping a straight back, and maybe applying some weights to make that a little bit more kind of absorbing.
Yeah, the weight, applying a weight to a movement, will make you stronger. That's one of the basic fundamentals of fitness. So, and of course strength is really important when it comes to cricket. So yeah, 13-year-olds can do it, but you probably don't want to be sticking a bar on your back and trying to lift as much weight as you can. You want to be learning the technique at the age of 13, and the way to learn the technique is to squat, probably not every day. I mean, there's no reason why you couldn't, but you want to mix up the movements a bit, so maybe you squat two or three times a week, maybe you do it with body weight if you can. Maybe you do it as a stretch. Maybe you do it with a little bit of weight. You can hold a dumbbell against your chest. Hold a dumbbell against your chest so that you're holding the weight in your hands like it's a goblet, and then you can squat down that way. That teaches you good form automatically, or you can do that with a kettlebell as well. And then basic. You don't need to go to very low reps, but basic. Say three sets of 10 is absolutely fine for a 13-year-old. As you get older, you might want to vary things up a bit. You might want to put a bar on your back or do front-loaded squats with weight. But the key really is technique first. Learn the correct technique to do it first, and then move on to adding weight once you've got the technique correct. So do make sure there's somebody who's coaching you to be able to do that. But a squat is a absolutely critical exercise for cricket fitness. I think it's one of the primal patterns, if you like, of movement. Being able to squat down with both feet on the ground is really important. And also, there's other primal movements as well. So don't forget about those. Squats aren't the be-all and end-all. You've got single leg squats, of course. You've got lunge positions, which are really important. And then you've got lifting things off the ground, you know, deadlift style movements, you know, being able to do that with the correct technique. That's lower body stuff. And then there's upper body stuff, which is basically pushing and pulling. Being able to pull something towards you is an important movement for cricket. Being able to push something away from you is an important movement for cricket. And there's different ways that you can pull or push. And then there's core stability on top of that as well. So don't, you know, squats aren't the be all and end all. If you are young, you can do them from any age. Make sure you can do them with good technique, with body weight first, and move on to applying extra weight as and when you're ready to do that. Don't go over the top. Use it as part of a complete fitness training program, and you won't go far wrong. Okay, so I think we covered squats there. What's next on the list?
We've got a question from Joshua. He's 19 years old, originates from Melbourne. He's currently studying in Jerusalem. This could be an interesting story. Just joined a cricket side over there in the league. Consists mainly of a lot of players who have played international level. Made his debut last Friday in a practice 2020 game and was put on to bowl against their captain and best player, who came in at number 6. Upon running into bowl, he felt that he was bowling a decent line and length, as kind of coached, and what you would determine as a good line and length, middle and off stump. However, the outcome wasn't quite as expected. Cracked for a number of fours, and then shot his confidence to bits. Went for 16 off of the first 9 balls, along with 3 wides. So it all went downhill. So after the game, he was consoling himself with a couple of the other players, and they advised him that when he's over in that part of the world, many of the players have an Indian background, that he should bowl just backward of a good length. So his question is, how does he now go about improving, whether you call it improving, I don't know, but improving his line and length to be consistent of hitting the same area of the pitch, that he can obviously hit this just backward of a length area, so this doesn't happen again?
First of all, before I even answer the question, I put a little proviso at the beginning, which is not all players from the subcontinent are bad against back of a length bowling. I mean, it's a bit of a cliche to say that. It's almost like saying South Africa choke every time. I mean, we all know South Africans are chokers, but not every time, unfortunately, not every time. So, not all Indian batsmen are bad against the short ball. So you do have to have a little bit of awareness of what's going on and not just try and bang it into the pitch all the time. Because good players will, unless you're very quick, good players will deal with short of a length bowling, whether they're good on the back foot or not. But assuming that you want to aim for a bit more back of a length and you don't want to really be a swing bowler, you want to hit the deck and you want to get up in the ribs and all the rest of it, then it is as simple as putting a target down on the length that you want to hit and then bowling at it until you're bored and then bowling at it some more. One really simple thing is just go to the net, market your run up, get a bag of balls and just keep bowling at that target. It's amazing how often, actually, when it comes to bowling advice, the answer is bowl at a target, because that is half the battle. When it comes to bowling, you know, there's really only two things that you have to worry about: how quickly it's coming down, and where it lands. So the where it lands side of it can be solved by you, you know, putting down a target and keep bowling at it. We put an article up on the website recently, actually, saying the different types of practice a bowler can do instead of just having nets. So have a look at that. That's going to be the type of thing that you want to do. If you can hit the back of a length target 5 out of 6, say, then maybe you can work on, you set down 2 targets. You have a fuller one and a slightly fuller ball and a slightly shorter ball, and you work on adjusting your length. So you go from the fuller one where you're trying to swing it away, say, and so you bowl it a bit fuller to give it a chance to swing, and then you go for the one which is a bit back of a length and you're trying to get it up in the batsman's ribs. It's just a bit of variation there because it's quite hard to adjust your length. A lot of bowlers can bowl a consistent length, but not many can adjust their length back and forward very easily. So that's okay. So if you can do that 80% of the time, then go for it. Work on bowling those different length of deliveries. But don't forget to keep the fuller ball in mind, whether it's a Yorker or just one that's a bit pitched up so it swings. Don't forget to bear that in mind because it's pretty hard to hit a ball that pitches just forward of a good length and swings away a little bit. It's quite hard for a batsman, even a good batsman, to hit that. He might try to drive it and get caught in the slip. So, you know, if you can swing the ball, don't forget about that as a weapon in your armoury. In this next portion of the show, we're going to be talking to Gary Palmer. Gary's CCM Academy is world renowned for producing high quality cricketers with excellent techniques. And Gary is also the batting coach of Pitch Vision Academy, our online coaching academy. How long does it take to groove that basic technique into someone and get them into that robotic style where they don't have to think about it anymore? It just becomes natural to produce the shot in the perfect way.
How long is a piece of string? Difficult. Everyone's different. Some people learn quicker than others, but obviously if you have regular prolonged grooving sessions, I mean up to 2 hours plus, then it will happen a lot quicker. But you know, if someone does have a good technique, it will not look robotic at all. It's like the comment you hear people say, so-and-so's overcoached. I don't think you can be overcoached. I think you can be badly coached, you know, given the wrong technical information. You know, very small changes in technique, if they're wrong, can have a huge impact on a player and totally, totally mess up their form. And I mean, the flip side of the coin as well, if you're out of nick, very small, slight positive changes to technique to make it more efficient, again, can have a huge impact on that player doing really, really well. So the robot thing, I think you've got to differentiate between, you've got to be a robot of basic technique, because we all got to have a good foundation to go out and bat with. But when you go and start talking about game plans, then you don't want to be a robot. Everybody's different. You know, I might feel I want to smack it back over the bowler's head. The bloke next to me might feel he wants to pick it off middle stump and hit it through mid wicket. You know, that's your own choice. That's how we all differ. Some people will take more risks than others. You know, experience in matches will mould the way you play. But it's no good going out into a match trying to deliver loads of game plans without having the basic techniques of those shots in the V, front and back foot, in order. And all too often, you see people trying to do that, and they come unstuck.
So I can see there's a clear differentiation there between the technical side, the way that you develop the technical side, and the way that you develop the tactical side, the game plan side of things. There are some people who advocate a sort of almost a combination of those methods, where they say, you know, they say to somebody, hit this ball through these cones. I don't care how you do it, as long as you're getting the ball through the cones. So they're basing it completely on the outcome rather than the way that they're getting it through the cone, because they'll work out the rest for themselves. How do you feel about that method of coaching?
I use that quite a bit, but I think you just can't use that with the cones thing on its own. Yes, if for instance, if the ball's swinging in from left arm over, and you put your cones, sort of one cone straight and one sort of mid on, and tell a player to hit through that target area, that player will start getting themselves automatically in pretty decent body positions to actually hit that target, right? But you know, we do this inside on a very flat surface. We do it on a bowling machine when we know exactly where the ball's going all the time. It's always pitched up. Now, to try and do that really well against a world-class bowler on a grass pitch, the wicket might be doing a bit, they're varying their length and line. Well, it's easy off a bowling machine to drop your elbow and whack it through a target area when you know where it's going all the time. But that isn't going to work when you're up against a bowler outside on grass. And a coach needs to look beyond what they're seeing happening indoors and think, OK, that's fine here, but is this going to work on grass? And the answer to the question generally is going to be no. You need to have a really efficient technique. So I believe in both together. I'm a big believer in target areas. So you've got a visual in your head. It's a good way for a coach to lure a player to hit the ball in the right direction. But that coupled with some intricate fine tuning of technique, shoulder position, head position, back position is the quick way to progress that player forward. So when they go outside and they do play on grass against a good bowler, they're successful.
Okay, so let's tie that idea back into the ABC method. You have a systematic way of programming that ABC method into someone using the bowling machines or with the swing settings. What is that method that you use?
Okay, well, there's a system. You're right. There is a systematic way of doing it. And if you're a right-handed batsman or woman, generally when you're in the nets or on a machine, the machine is over the wicket, swinging the ball away or straight. The most common fault with batters is to tip to the offside, play the ball too square on the offside, get the feet blocked off, play around the front pad. I believe that if you put the bowling machine left arm over, swinging the ball back into the right-hander from sort of off stump, then because the machine is initially at that angle on the crease, the batter starts to subconsciously, without knowing it, open up their front shoulder position, get their head slightly looking back towards the machine. And because the ball's swinging in, you feel that you have to keep your balance, let the ball swing, and hit it back up the wicket. Now, if it's swinging in, the batter just stands there and just needs to keep their head wicket to wicket. So that means your head is in line with the wicket at the other end. So the ball swings on to straight and you hit it straight. If it's on your legs, you ping it through mid on or mid wicket, but your head doesn't move. It's nice and straight. So you get the feel of being totally balanced, totally aligned and confidence hitting the ball straight and through mid on. And you've not gone into the process of tipping to the offside at this point. You could then follow that up with putting the bowling machine over the wicket and swinging the ball into the batsman or woman from off stump into middle again. Batter's got to have the same principle. Keep the head wicket to wicket. Let the ball swing on to the line of your head and drive the ball straight. Or if it drifts down the leg side, head still in the same position. Shoulder open slightly as it does on the other angle as well. And you hit mid on and straight. So with both swings, the batter is encouraged to stay with the head and balance wicket to wicket, i.e. lined up with the wicket the other end. So at this point, you've gone left arm over swinging it in, right arm over swinging it in. Both swings are luring you to not tip to the offside, i.e. keeping your head wicket to wicket. So at this point now, because the ball's being delivered over the wicket, it's just brought you across and got you thinking about possibly playing an off drive, but you're still hitting your straight and on drive, well balanced and well aligned. Finally, you finish off with right arm over, swinging the ball away. So you're playing your good on drives, you're playing your good straight drives, you're really confident in that. And obviously now you've got the feel of doing it correctly and the ball's on off stump. And now you can just push your head across to hit the ball towards mid-off or extra cover. That way, it's quite progressively built up that you play all your shots really well, but you nip in the bud and minimise the chance of tipping to the offside. I think that works really, really well. And if you had a player that kept whipping the ball off mid and leg too square of the wicket. The ultimate angle to stop them doing that, and this now goes into working on the completion of shot, you'd have the bowling machine left arm over, but swing it from outside leg stump across the batsman onto middle. So if you play across the ball now, you could miss it, you could get a leading edge. So again, like you said earlier with target areas, you're lured into keeping your elbow up as long as you can. So you cope with that swing and you hit the ball back through straight or mid on. But and to do the initial two angles really well, left arm swinging it in over the wicket, right arm over swinging it in over the wicket, you must tip, as you lean with your head, push your head forward of your body, you must tip that back foot in. So both feet are starting to point up the wicket more. Now, the older sort of textbook sort of says come up onto the inside of your big toe. I think your back foot should come round more onto the tip of the toe. And if you watch a lot of the players on the telly, when they hit a good straight drive and a good on drive, that back foot does turn round. So your hips align up the wicket more rather than your sort of stomach pointing to cover. Big problem in this country. Here, a lot of coaches, especially when the ball's on leg stump, they say get your shoulder at the ball, head and shoulder at the ball. How does a young lad know what that is, head or shoulder? I would say when the ball's at middle and leg, your head has to be at the ball. If it's swinging into, your shoulder may be pointing at straight mid wicket. Your back path would start now over sort of second slip and swing in a straight line from backswing to target area. It's a bit of a myth that cricket's a sideways on game. You know, beyond off stump, it starts to become that way. But middle and leg stump, it's all about getting your head at the ball, letting that back foot turn around a little bit. And that back foot turning in, if you stood up now and tried to do that, you would notice or feel much more balanced. Your head starts to be right over your front foot. So literally, you could stand there, pick your back leg off the ground, put your arms out like an ice skater on one leg. That's the sort of position you'd need to be in to hit a really good on drive. But when that back foot stays too sideways, players tend to get blocked off and they can't access the ball when it's swinging into them or it's swinging away from them and it's bowled very straight. And even when you hit the ball at mid-off or extra cover, you know, again, big fault is players get their shoulder too far around and a ball they should hit at mid-off, they end up hitting an extra cover. You know, it's not the most efficient way of doing it. The most efficient way of doing it is getting your head at the ball. So when you hit it, your head's lined up through the ball to the target area. If you turn your shoulder too much, it gets in the way and then you have to reopen it, in which case you get squared up. So it's quite important to really, really think about getting the head forward of the body, head at the ball, more so than the shoulder. And that back foot probably turns in even when you play pretty much straight off drive. And again, if you think of coming down, not that we've done this, any of us, but if you see those guys on the ski jumps, come down off the end of the ski jump, and when they land, their feet are pretty much straight. That's the position for the straight drive. Feet closer together, same alignment for the on drive. But you do need to open up to play these shots.
That wraps it up for this week. There is a competition winner that we need to decide on. So who in your head, Berners, is the best question this week?
There's only one winner. Anyone who ever endeavours to go to Jerusalem to study deserves something. So there you go, Joshua. You're the best man for the prize today.
Yeah, fantastic. And Joshua wins a Pitch Vision Academy coaching course, all delivered online with videos and worksheets and all the rest of it. He gets to choose from a vast number of courses covering batting, bowling, fielding, 2020 cricket, fitness, just about anything you can think of, and we're updating those on a regular basis as well. So if you get excited about getting better at cricket, head to pitchvision.com www.thebrightonfans.com/academy and have a look at that. Now, we do want your questions. You can win a prize, remember. You can get us via the telephone or via email. What's the details you got there, Berners, for that?
And drop us a line on 020-88-167-691 or drop us an email at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. And don't forget our Twitter address, which is PVCricketCoach.
Yeah, and we're always Twittering away, so you can get us on there anytime you like. That's the end of the show. We'll be back next week with some more questions and some more interviews. So don't forget to subscribe in iTunes. And until then, we'll see you next week.